When Elizabeth Bishop was 3 years old, she witnessed the Great Salem Fire, an event that took place on the night of June 25, 1914, and that she would remember for the rest of her life. The fire raged in the darkness, sweeping through nearly 250 acres of the historic Massachusetts harbor town of Salem and reducing to charred ruins the homes of more than 20,000 inhabitants. The flames forced hundreds of Salem's residents to flee in small boats across Palmer Cove toward the relative safety of Marblehead on the opposite shore. It was there, near the beach at Marblehead, that Elizabeth was sharing a summer house with her recently widowed mother, Gertrude Boomer Bishop, and her father's family. In the posthumously published poem, A Drunkard, Bishop recalled that as the flames across the bay grew higher, the sky was bright red. Everything was red. Out on the lawn, my mother's white dress looked rose red. My white enameled crib was red. And she watched as boats filled with escaping people arrived on their beach. Yet the residents of Marblehead themselves felt anything but safe, for the red sky was filled with flying motes, cinders, and coals, and many citizens were hosing their roofs to prevent their houses, too, from bursting into flame. In the midst of this chaotic scene, the child, in search of her mother outdoors, found Gertrude and various neighbors giving coffee and food to Salem's refugees. Her own cries for attention and reassurance went unnoticed. All Bishop could later recall receiving from her mother was a stern reprimand early the next morning when the two were pacing the shoreline. As the child, out of curiosity, picked up a fragment of a woman's long black cotton stocking from a beach, strewn with cinders, dark with ash, strange objects blown across the water, her mother responded sharply, "Put that down!" This rebuke for her inquisitiveness provoked deep embarrassment and guilt, feelings that would echo through the decades in her memory, only to reappear in a profoundly self-exploratory poem, linking this experience with her problem with periodic alcohol abuse that Bishop still had on her desk at the moment of her death. Bishop's mother, Gertrude, was in fragile psychological health when the Great Fire occurred in 1914. Her bouts of emotional disturbance had become acute following the death of her husband 3 years earlier when the infant Elizabeth was 8 months old. 2 years after the fire, when the child was five, Gertrude would suffer a mental breakdown from which she never recovered. Bishop would continue to be haunted by her mother's disturbing outcries, a scream, the echo of a scream, that, as she discloses in her 1953 story, In the Village, signaled her mother's mental collapse. This was the scream that became a part of Bishop's inner world and came there to live forever. Not loud, just alive, forever. Bishop would continue to suffer from these and other traumatic early losses, losses so extreme and so well remembered that she once told her friend and fellow poet Robert Lowell, "When you write my epitaph, you must say I was the loneliest person who ever lived." Yet there was another side to Bishop's personality that must be understood if we are to grasp the complex persona she presented to the world, both in her personal life and in her poetry. Though her frequently traumatic past was very much alive for her, Bishop was also extraordinarily engaged with the present. When, approaching 60, Bishop arrived to teach at Harvard University in the fall of 1970, the younger poet Kathleen Spivak noted that she had the quality of surprised youthfulness in her eyes. Spivak also found her quite unlike the austere public persona of Miss Bishop that Spivak had come to expect from the elder poet's reputation. In her second year at Harvard, Bishop set up a ping-pong table in the foyer of her small apartment on Brattle Street. Playing the game was supposed to help the arthritis in her hands. Spivak recalls their weekly ping-pong matches where Elizabeth dashed about on her side of the table, her charming face pursed with concentration and bursting into laughter at her tricky shots. Later in the evening, when guests arrived for dinner, they would be seated around the ping-pong table, now sans net and demurely graced by a tablecloth. As her friend and Harvard colleague Monroe Engel observed, Bishop didn't have space in her apartment for both her ping-pong table and a dining table, so she chose the former because, as she declared, you could eat off the ping-pong table, but you couldn't play ping-pong on a dining table.